Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from my studio in downtown Nicosia. And with me, all the way from the US of A, I have Dr. Habiba Sarabi. Dr. Sarabi is one of the four women at the Doha negotiation table with the Taliban. She was also the first Afghan woman to become a provisional governor. But Dr. Sarabi has so many firsts, so I will pass the microphone to her to introduce herself. Welcome, Dr. Sarabi.
Hello, Magda. Thank you very much for having me. I'm Habiba Sarabi. I am from Afghanistan. As you said, I was one of the four female members for the negotiation team with Taliban. And now I am a member of the Women Forum for Afghanistan, and also the residence fellow of the Princeton University. So I have a lot of experience working with women inside Afghanistan as a Minister of Women's Affairs, and also the first female governor in Afghanistan, Governor of Bamyan, working with the High Peace Council and involved with the peace negotiation.
Habiba, the Afghan women are in a lot of trouble. The Taliban have made them invisible to an extent that no one expected. The world realized the Taliban was going to do what they were going to do, but no one expected the extent. How are you coping? Or how are the women in Afghanistan coping? Because I know you're not in Afghanistan.
Of course, I'm not living in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, after the collapse, I was not able to go to Afghanistan. I was in Qatar on that time, but left Qatar and now I am in US. So for us as a people or women in exile, it's very tough to remember everything that is happening inside Afghanistan and suffering here. But most importantly, the people, the women that they are inside Afghanistan, they are suffering day to day, day and night. And every individual, they are in a very, very, horrible situation. They are living in a horrible situation. Now, even today, I have received the news that if women going outside, even with mahram or a companion, but if their voice will be loud, there will be punishment for them. So you can imagine how hard is living in under the rule of Taliban. So for us, the women that we have been fighting for a long period. So it is hard to hear that all our achievement, all everything that we have done, it's just demolished and finished with the rule for the rule that Taliban now applying inside Afghanistan. It's, to be honest, very tough.
I think the mental health of the Afghan woman in Afghanistan must be shattered.
Sure, because now my daughter is working with some of the Afghan young lady as a mentor with some of organization. Every day when she has a kind of consultation meeting every day, every morning in US time, which is evening in Kabul in Afghanistan. So she has a lot of, sad story when the women, especially young girls, they are sharing their story with my daughter. Most of them, they want some sort of material and book that it could give them kind of morale, and also they can stand on their own feet, and because morally they are very depressed, so they don't have even enthusiasm to how to live. So the suicide rate in Afghanistan is very high now. Even sometimes we are hearing among the men because the poverty is a big problem and they cannot find food for the family. So they are committing suicide. The suicide rate among Afghan people are very high at this moment, and mental health is a big problem at this moment inside Afghanistan. But the problem is that even the people who are outside the country in exile, if they wanted to try to coordinate or to manage some kind of help from outside Afghanistan for the mental health, Taliban are not accepting that. They think that it's okay, everything is okay inside, and we are in a peaceful environment, no need for mental health treatment and program. So this is really horrible.
Is the internet available in Afghanistan?
Yes, it is available, but mostly people are, so because of poverty, sometimes they cannot get in. I mean, the
internet costs money, so
unstable.
If you've got no food on the if you've got no food on the table, you've got no internet.
Sure, sure. This is the problem.
What can we do? Is there anything that can be done?
So many people and many organizations and Afghan women asylum or in exile, they are trying to do different projects. One of the biggest projects that it has a lot of impact is online education. So the online education for more than sixth grade is something that we can do or you can do. And also giving a lot a scholarship for women and girls that they can go out of the country and do, or maybe some to be joined with some standard university outside the country. It's also can be done. But the income project, small business, which is women are doing inside Afghanistan, some of the women, this is also possible that women out of the country that they can do it. And of course,
what kind of businesses at home?
So
what
can they are doing the tailoring and producing the cloths or dress for the other people for market. And they are doing the small business on agriculture, the food production, the beekeeping, and saffron, producing saffron. Or, for example, different type of food and small agribusiness is possible to do it because people, women are doing inside their home.
Is it easy to pass on money or do a project in which you engage Afghan women in Afghanistan, entrepreneurs? If I want to help a young woman in her business, how can I send money from abroad?
So people mostly sending by hawala. There is one type of thing. However, the Taliban are searching, and mostly they are searching the people who are doing hawala. But anyway, there are a certain way of sending money in Afghanistan. There are some organization here, for example, in US, we are sending a big amount, but sometimes when some of our friends need for some small amount of money, we can send it by these organizations. They are they have the system that they can do. And another organization, Asil App, and he is a Afghan young man. He made an app and he can collect money and deliver to Afghanistan. There are certain ways that people are sending money or helping Afghan people inside the country.
If you can afterwards send me the two links for the money, it might be useful.
Sure, I will definitely do
afterward.
It. Yeah.
Is the Afghan community, the diaspora, what work are they doing to pressurize the Taliban or to pressurize the country supporting the Taliban?
For example, my organization, WFA, Women Forum for Afghanistan, we are advocating and lobbying with the Security Council, member of Security Council, and a state member of and a state member. And for example, in UNGA, we will have a side event. We will have we will invite many people from the policymaker from different organizations. During the CSW, we are doing such a things, and many times this is something that we are bringing people, inviting them to discuss about the Afghan women problem. And last year in January, we had a meeting in Istanbul and brought some think tank from the different regional country, for example, China, Russia, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Iran, and so many countries. So we are bringing people from different countries, talk with them and share the problem of Afghan women, and also requesting them that putting pressure to their policymaker. We have contact with the policymaker, some policymaker, not many of them, some policymaker in US. We have contact with the EU special representative, and there is a forum there, and sometimes we are organizing such a meeting. For example, there were another meeting in London at the end of July, and Loredana also attended to that. So bringing women together to talk about that, and bringing policymakers to hear the voice of Afghan women. These are the advocacy that we are doing in exile.
It makes me so sad when I hear what's happening in Afghanistan, also because this issue of women's rights is not limited to Afghanistan. You look at the woman in Iran, you look at the woman in Gaza, you look at the woman in Syria, you look at the woman. Instead of taking steps forward, we've actually taken so many steps back, and it's not just Afghanistan. Yours is an extreme, but you have a country like the US that does not permit abortion. And that's supposed to be the country, the leading country, democratic country. Where did we go wrong? Can you think of where we went wrong?
I think this is not us that we are going wrong. I think this is the big power and policymaker that they are going wrong. For example, in Afghanistan, they came on the name of the good governance, human rights, women's rights, and this issue. At the end, they started to deal with Taliban. So they, at the beginning, they thought that Taliban, they believed that Taliban are their enemy, but at the end, the Taliban was their friend. So this is the policymaker that anytime, anywhere, when the program or there is no interest for their agenda, they will, draw out. So you can see everywhere. Everywhere in the world, in Gaza and different other part of the world, if the agenda of the superpower and the big power of the world, it's not matching to their interest, they are withdraw. So many time I have shared this idea to the policymaker, even with the chair Guterres. That if today the problem is going on in Afghanistan, tomorrow it will be the problem. The problem will not remain in Afghanistan. It will expand in the neighboring country and the region. And so that's, please do not support the extremist group. And even our neighboring country and the region. So if they want to support the extremists, this problem will engage them to that problem. They have to take care about that, that extremism and terrorism is not the only problem, the problem only for Afghanistan. It will be for the for neighboring country, for the region, and for the world. So it is a kind of warning for everyone.
But as you said, in the West, selling guns makes you money. So if you have someone in power that's going to buy guns, you're not going to care about the human rights of the person there.
Sure. This is,
and that's what you're saying. The extremist groups are very good customers of the people selling guns.
That's true. When we are thinking deeply, how and where they can get all these guns to fight, no? How and where they can get money to support or to support their follower in Afghanistan or in Gaza or anywhere else. So this is the matter of the dealing. This is the matter of interest, their interest. This is the matter of their agenda, unfortunately. And we are, we people, we are the victim of all these games that they are playing.
Oh, I agree with you. I live in Cyprus, and I don't know what you know about Cyprus. It's a
I never been there, unfortunately. I have heard a lot about that, and it is because I have a kind of affiliation with Turkey, and it's very close to Turkey. And so, and one of my daughter friend, she stayed there. So I know this.
Cyprus has been in a frozen conflict for 50 years, and the one reason, the major reason that this has never been solved is because the big people that make decisions find it convenient to have an unsolved problem here.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in no way close to what is happening in Afghanistan or Gaza or anywhere else, because I'm safe, I've got a roof over my head. But I also live on an island with 1.2 million. There's six armies.
Mm.
The Greek, the Turkish, Greek Cypriot, Turkish Cypriot, UN and British. I have checkpoints. So if I want to see my Turkish Cypriot sisters or friends, I've got to go through a checkpoint. Although there again, it's not a checkpoint like the Gaza and Israel. But you can see that we get to a point of a solution and then something happens. Russia wants something, or the Americans want something, or the Turkey wants something. And then the people of Cyprus are forgotten.
Yeah, yeah. That's the story.
But we don't stop.
We shouldn't.
We don't stop fighting.
We shouldn't. And Afghan women as well, we shouldn't stop. Of course, this is for me the second time that not only for me, for many Afghan women, not for young generation, for the my age and in the middle age women, that this is the second time that we are suffering from the separation of Taliban. But we are not, stop. We shouldn't stop, and we have to continue. We have to fight. How long we are alive, we have to fight. The fight and struggle is on our mind, in our idea, and also this is our goal to reach destination.
But I have to admit, I think we all have to admit that what's happening with the Afghan woman is unheard of in the last 50 years. No one ever would have expected or anticipated the extent of the restrictions that the Taliban is placing on women.
Yes.
It's as if the only thing they want from the woman is to produce sons.
it's a kind of sexual labor for
yes,
Taliban.
Exactly.
And also, yeah, and produce sons and also doing their house chores, making food for them that they have to be comfortable.
It's there for the comfort of men. It's as you said, sexual, pure sexual slavery.
Yeah, that's
pure sexual slavery. Yes. I feel for the older woman it must be hard, but my heart really goes out to the young girls that are looking ahead of them and are not seeing a future. Someone wrote somewhere that what the Taliban is doing is almost taking away the dreams of the women. Then it's not allowing the women to dream, even to dream.
Yeah, this. I think the Taliban are afraid of women. They think if women can be educated, if women can go out, and so there will be liberty, there will be freedom, there will be, knowledge and science and technology. So how we can compete with them? That's why. They think that women are challenging them, so that they are. That's why they are suppressing women.
I agree with you. The only reason they can understand suppressing is because they will lose control.
That's true.
Tell me, how do you feel? How are you coping? When did you leave? Just to start, when did you leave Afghanistan?
It was March 2000. I mean, the first time when the negotiation started was September 2020, and we had the negotiation for one year with Taliban. Of course, it's a long history that how they were not honestly coming to the negotiation table. They were just wanted to kill the time, and
they were playing games.
Yeah, playing games and get legitimacy from the Doha process. But the last time when I went to Kabul, it was March 2021. There was the Moscow conference, and I was a part of the delegation to go to Moscow and return from Moscow. I was in Kabul for a week, and it was my last time. And then came back to Qatar, Doha. And then when the collapse happened at August 2021, I just stayed for 1 week in Qatar and then went to Turkey and then to Germany and finally to US.
So you were in Doha with my friend Fawzia Kufi?
Yeah, she's your friend, is she?
Yes, I know her well.
Okay, yeah. Actually,
we're both part of the Women's Alliance for Security Leadership.
Yes.
So I was with her in June in Albania for a conference.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Fawzia, we were together with, of course, she was also one of the female members of negotiation. But when the collapse happened, she was in Kabul because she went there to have a break to see the family. And then, but we stayed in Doha. Yes, we were together. And now she is also a member of our forum, this Women Forum for Afghanistan.
And she was also last week or the week before in Oslo at the Nobel Peace Prize session.
Yes, yeah. She had
giving a speech. Tell me, how hopeful are you? How hopeful are you that there will be a change?
It is hard. It is hard, but not impossible. Because people are there in Afghanistan. They are continuing their fighting, and women are there, and they are still continuing their fighting. So that's why changing are possible. And women in exile also continuously fighting for the rights of Afghan women, and putting pressure to the international community and policymaker to change their mind and put pressure to Taliban. Pushing the Security Council for this more keep the sanction to Taliban. So this is the way that we would like to bring some change on putting pressure to Taliban. We can make some change for that.
I was in New York in July for a Women Mediators Conference, and we had a meeting with the Security Council.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to them was, because also in terms of Cyprus, they put resolutions and then the people who agree to the resolutions don't implement.
Mm.
And I said to them, you know what? The UN has got to find a way to make people accountable.
Mm-hmm. The problem is even UN is violating their own convention and resolution. You know this, you know about the CEDA, you know about 1325. And so even the last resolution about Afghanistan, 2721, I think. But all of them, they just violated these. They violated because they didn't invite for the main meeting at the main table in Doha. They violated because Taliban every day, they are violating the human rights and women's rights in Afghanistan, but they are not, I mean, they are continuously doing engagement with Taliban. So this is something that we are really, to be honest, disappointed because UN also violating their resolution and also treaties.
Well, I agree with you because in another meeting I had in 2020, I was at a round table with Guterres for the anniversary of 1325.
Mm-hmm.
And my comment was, you know what? You've got 1325. Why are you not enforcing the inclusion of women in peace processes in Cyprus? Mm. Why are you agreeing to two men at the table. Why are you agreeing to the fact that, okay, the design of our peace process is not perfect, but there's got to be a way, since you are the creators of 1325, that you implement it correctly and you don't force because they can't force, but you can actually strongly encourage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I agree with you that a lot of responsibility, it's not just the Talibans and the Hamases and the Israels and the whatever of the world that are violating, or the Turkeys are violating resolutions. The UN is also needs to be accountable to the resolutions they are passing.
That's true.
So I think we're agreed on the fact that it's not just the bad guys that are violating.
Yeah.
The Hamases, the Turkeys in Cyprus's case, we also need to find a way, as you are doing and as I did for a split second, of telling them that they've got to find a way, firstly, to make the resolution stronger, mm-hmm. with accountability, and to also enforce it. You can't have a table with no woman at the table.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
That's true. That's true.
Tell me, who are your biggest supporters in terms of international organizations? Who are your biggest supporters?
We can't tell that who is the biggest supporter. But for example, before the EU and some European country, they were, because the value of human rights was important, were important for them. They were the biggest supporter. But nowadays, for example, many European country, they push to close the embassy in the European country because it was by Taliban, by the request of Taliban. So this is many, I mean, human rights defender, mostly they are the biggest, supporter.
But I agree with you, when they close down embassies or representations in the country in conflict, they're doing a disservice to the country, to the civilians, not to the leadership.
Sure.
And they don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. That's
because
true.
If there's no UN, EU office in Kabul or no US embassy, mm-hmm. What does the Taliban care? They're going to do what they want. It's the civilians that need information or access to something that are going to be affected.
Unfortunately, the civilian and the service for Taliban is not important. They are mostly focusing for their own power. And
exactly.
Yeah, even in Afghanistan, they, for example, weekly they are receiving $40 million by UN. So, but the service for the people were very, very poor, and the humanitarian aids didn't deliver rightly and in balance. And many Taliban got benefit from that humanitarian aids. So that's why the service and Taliban is not important. They are focusing mostly for their own power, how they can
control.
Get more power to suppress the people.
But it's true in most cases, and it's not just Afghanistan, although it doesn't make it okay. Humanitarian aid goes to the leadership and 10% will go to the people.
Yeah, that's and also there was not a kind of balance between the, I mean, different ethnic group that they are getting, receiving the humanitarian aid. So they were mostly for their own, distributed for their own follower and supporter.
Exactly, to the people that supported them or their family.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me, Habiba, have you got family in Afghanistan? Have you still got family in Afghanistan?
Yes, I have my brothers. Two of my brothers, they are my brother-in-law. He is there with his family. Many other relatives, but three close family member, which is my brother in family, and my elder brother and his family, and brother-in-law and his family. There are three main close family, but there are many, I mean, cousins that they are living in Afghanistan.
And are they safe?
So there's just surviving. This is something, to be honest, they are not very safe.
Can't even say how you feel.
Yeah.
Can't understand how you feel.
Yeah, this is. Yeah.
Do they want to leave?
Sometimes it's very hard and difficult for them to leave. How they can leave the country, this is we have to think about that. We have to find a way that how we can take them out.
They can't just buy an air ticket and leave.
E-ticket and also the visa issue and these sort of issues, that's also a big problem for them.
Okay. Tell me, you a hematologist?
Actually, it is by Google, it's written hematologist. I'm not a hematologist. I have been worked with the hematology section. I am a pharmacist. By professional, I'm a pharmacist. I have worked with the hematology section for a long time and then, left my professionality on the pharmacy and turned to politics.
Okay, because Wikipedia did put you in as a hematologist.
Yeah, I have sent my short bio to you. You didn't receive it?
Did I get it? I didn't receive it. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Now, Loredana sent me something about you.
Yeah.
But it didn't include a profession. It doesn't matter. I learned something new. So now you've left the pharmacy to the one side. And you're a politician by profession.
Yes.
You're keeping to the politician.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Tell me, what are your wishes for the future, except for the fact that you wish the government changes yesterday and women come out of their invisibility?
I wish that Afghan people lives and under in a better situation, in better circumstances, with freedom, with democracy can run the country and people should feel their rights that they deserve it. I mean, the basic rights of women and human being. And the people think that they are like a equal citizen to others. You know that at this moment, I am covering different cap. So I'm a woman and also at this Hazara, that they are suffering today a lot. And you know that you may heard about that massacre and recently happened on 12th of September in one of the province of 15 people without any reason. Unfortunately, they just shattered and killed with, they call it that Daesh, but it is similar to Taliban and Daesh. They are, they are brother with each other. They are dividing their duty to how to suppress the people. So Hazara people are suffering a lot. So this is, they are not thinking that Hazara people are a kind of equal citizen. So my wish is that one day the citizenship in Afghanistan will be, a kind of human feeling citizenship, and there will be inclusive government. Women should have their, enjoy from their basic rights, and we should go. We have to go toward democracy and freedom.
And the most basic of human rights that must be made available to the women is the right to education.
That's true. That's true.
The right to education. I think is there anything else you would like to say before we close?
I think we have covered a lot. Thank you very much. May I pronounce Magda, your name?
Yes, but it's also in Arabic. It's also
Majda.
Majda. Yeah.
Majda. Okay.
I have a lot of Arab friends and they say to me, no, your name is not Magda, it's Majda.
Yeah, Majda. That's it. Thank you very much, Majda.
Thank you very much for agreeing to speak to us. And don't forget to send me to the two links for anyone who may want to pass on a donation.
Okay.
So that when I upload this podcast, we can advertise it with that.
I will write down and to send it to you, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much, Biba, for speaking with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
I too wish that the women of Afghanistan, and not only the women of Afghanistan, have the right to dignified life.
Thank you very much being beside Afghan women, and thank you to have our voice and... Thank you so much.
Always willing. And if you have anyone else you want to send to me for a podcast, just send their name to me and I'm very willing.
Yeah, thank you.
So have a lovely rest of the afternoon. And as we said, dignity, a dignified life for all women first in Afghanistan and the rest of the world.
Inshallah. Thank you.
Thank you, Habiba.
Thank you, bye.
And to the listeners, stay safe.
Bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.